Let's go ahead and open to Leviticus chapter 15. These commandments were probably issued around the same time that the tabernacle started its operation. The Levites and the priests have all been ordained and initiated, and the book of Leviticus is the technical manual to help the priests and Levites know what their responsibilities are in acting on behalf of God with the larger population of Israelis. So there's a lot of technical information in these early chapters, and now we're going through some very specific expectations of what you should do if this happens. So, and it's a, what should you as a priest or a Levite do when this happens with Israeli people? And that's what makes this book kind of tough in the reading of Scripture. I know many, many people have tried to read through the Bible verse by verse from Genesis to Revelation in that exact order. And right around here in the early part of Leviticus is where they generally get bogged down, because it's just repeated rule after rule, action after action. And much of it has to do with a sacrificial system that is not part of our Christian era. So it's really tough to slog through that. So I hope you haven't lost your appetite for the Word of God as we've kind of been reviewing a lot of these things. I've tried to add some of the tie-ins to New Testament things as we go along and explain maybe some of the procedures historically. So today, we're going to start talking about discharges because people get sick, people have wounds, people have things that happen in their body, which in the Jewish culture were referred to as becoming unclean. So there was something happening that would require you to remove yourself from common interaction with people. We, in our modern day society, have something very similar, and that is, if you get sick, you are expected to be kind and thoughtful to other people and remove yourself from society so that you don't infect others. And of course, doctors and nurses are the ones that try to help people out as they're going through those time periods, and those doctors and nurses take special precautions. Well, we're going to see that the priests and the Levites are expected to do something similar. And some of these things that we're going to talk about actually do appear to be health conditions that do need hygiene applications and isolation procedures to get the people past them. But there are some things that are normal bodily functions that just need to be thought of as a time when special consideration is given. I'll explain what I mean by that once we get to one of those. Leviticus chapter 15, verse 1. He who is spoke to Moses and Aaron, saying, "Speak to the people of Israel and say to them, when any man has a discharge from his body, his discharge is unclean." Now, some of the commentaries will pin this discharge down specifically to sexual sort of discharges. And I've even seen some of them say that we're talking about gonorrhea and things like that. I don't think it's quite that specific. I think there may be a more generic or general application here. Things like, what if you've got a snotty nose, or you've got a productive cough, or you've got an open wound that may not be bleeding, but it's oozing pus or something like that. So those would be discharges coming from the flesh. That's what the word body literally is. And so those things would be off limits which I've told you before, is kind of what the word unclean is intending to communicate here. So you're not supposed to be going and touching that bodily discharge. When I was in the military, my final job was to be a medical technician. And we were constantly reminded, do not touch bodily fluids ungloved, because that is a source of disease transmission. So we had procedures in place. When I work at the summer Christian camp, we tell the campers, the students, all the time, if somebody throws up, don't you touch it. If somebody is bleeding, don't you touch it. Let the people that are trained to take care of those things take care of it. So I think that's a little bit of what's being communicated here to the Israelis, is consider such discharges from the body as unclean. Don't touch it. Verse 3, this is the law of his uncleanness for a discharge, whether his body runs with his discharge or his body is blocked up by his discharge, it is his uncleanness. Now the question might be, well, how can you have a discharge that's blocked up? Well, you might think about somebody that's got diarrhea and then followed instantly by constipation. That could be an example of that. Or somebody that's had an open wound that may be seeping pus, but then it kind of crusts over. That could be kind of a discharge that is now blocked. So these are all indicators that you should not touch this stuff. And the person who is experiencing it should be off limits, except for those that know how to deal with this stuff. Verse 4, every bed on which the one with the discharge lies shall be unclean, and everything on which he sits shall be unclean. So this is the idea that it can be communicated, and we know this. People who have sicknesses that involve some sort of discharge can often pass disease elements onto surfaces. If anyone who touches his bed, and anyone who touches his bed shall wash his clothes and bathe himself in water and be unclean until evening. So people who are taking care of them, we'd call them nurses, medical professionals. It actually, in their culture, we're going to find out it's the Levites in particular that will be providing such care. Although we know that family members could be providing this care. So if you're coming into contact with somebody like that and you have to touch all this stuff or touch things that they're on, you wash your clothes, you wash your body, and you remain yourself separate from everybody else until the day is finished, the evening comes. And so that's going to have the natural effect of keeping transmission rates low. Verse 6, whoever sits on anything on which the one with the discharge is sat shall wash his clothes and bathe himself in water and be unclean until evening. Whoever touches the body of the one with the discharge shall wash his clothes and bathe himself in the water and be unclean until the evening. If the one who with the discharge spits on someone who is clean, then he shall wash his clothes and bathe himself in water and be unclean until evening. So don't just think he's spitting on somebody. Think about a cough or a nasty sneeze, okay? That's the expelling of that discharge out of the mouth or the nose that's going to get on somebody else. So that person that it gets on has to get cleaned up. Verse 9, any saddle on which the one with the discharge rides shall be unclean. So we'd think about the car. Whoever touches anything that was under him shall be unclean until the evening. And whoever carries such things shall wash his clothes and bathe himself in water and be unclean until evening. Anyone with whom the one with the discharge touches without having rinsed his hands in water shall wash his clothes and bathe himself in water and be unclean until the evening. So there's a lot of washing that's going on here. An earthenware vessel that the one with the discharge touches shall be broken, and every vessel of wood shall be rinsed in water. Earthen vessels, that is, things that are made of clay and then they're fired, they are more porous than wooden or metal surfaces. And so in this culture, it was just automatic practice. Destroy the things that may have soaked up some of the contamination. So pottery, gone. If the person has been handling it or spat on it or whatever, drank from it. So things made of wood, yeah, you can wash those out and that should be sufficient. Verse 13, when the one with the discharge is cleansed from his discharge, so it's finished, it's stopped, whatever was going on. His diarrhea has gone away. He doesn't have the productive cough anymore. He's not sneezing his head off and spraying things all over the place. Now he's back to, quote, normal. He shall count for himself 7 days for his cleansing and then wash his clothes. He shall bathe his body in fresh water and shall be clean. So he's basically going to go a week past the last evidence of symptoms. And then he will fully wash himself, get the clean clothes on, and then and only then is he able to kind of start interacting with people in society. Now, isn't it funny? This is something that we have been kind of dealing with our pandemic, is the question about how long after symptoms subside should it be trustworthy for somebody to have interaction with people again? Well, under the Jewish system, it was 7 days. It was a full week past last symptoms before you were able to go back in society. And actually, it was the eighth day, because the eighth day was when you offered a sacrifice, a symbolic, inexpensive sacrifice to show God's brought me through this and I'm back into my relationships. So verse 14, on the eighth day, he shall take two turtle doves or two pigeons, come before he who is at the entrance of the tent of meeting and give them to the priest. And the priest shall use them, one for a sin offering, the other for a burnt offering. The priest shall make atonement for him before he who is for his discharge. So now he's back into society itself. And this, I think, is all about sicknesses that go over several days' time. Like I said, I think we're talking about diarrhea. We're talking about productive coughs. We're talking about nasal exudate, snot that's coming out all over the place. And perhaps also open wounds, scabbed over wounds, things like that. All that needs to get past, a week past, before you can really start interacting with the rest of the people in the Jewish encampment. Now, we talk about something that is not related to a disease. It's related to a normal bodily function that is treated on a smaller scale of uncleanness or reserved interaction. So verse 16, if a man has an emission of semen, and this could either be in the act of sexuality, or it could be through something that just happens to the body at night. Okay? He shall bathe his whole body in water and be unclean until the evening. So he is supposed to keep himself kind of aloof from other people for the daylight hours after he's had such a discharge. Now, semen is counted as a blood product. And it actually is. We know that it's related into that. And so this is respect for blood that we're looking at here. So it's not that it's filthy dirty. It's, again, this idea of you get off limits or you show this special consideration or respect for something. Verse 17, every garment and every skin on which the semen comes shall be washed with water and be unclean until the evening. So there we go. If a man lies with a woman and has an emission of semen, both of them shall bathe themselves in water and be unclean until the evening. So again, same sort of thing. Both parties involved in the sexual act are supposed to show respect for this reproductive fluid that gives life. And that's the blood product idea. Now, when a woman has a discharge, and the discharge in her body is blood, she shall be in her menstrual impurity for 7 days, and whoever touches her shall be unclean until the evening. So here we have the monthly period of a woman that then is to be treated with extra special respect because life is in the blood. And blood is therefore to be highly respected. So she's going through her period every month, and the respect continues for 7 days after the last part of the flow is seen. And everybody that comes into contact with her during that period of time needs to count it as special respect for the blood. And they need to be considering themselves aloof from others until the evening following. Everything on which she lies during her menstrual impurity shall be unclean. Everything also on which she sits shall be unclean. Whoever touches her bed shall wash his clothes and bathe himself in water and be unclean until the evening. So again, this has got nothing to do with hygiene, purity sort of stuff, cleanliness in the sense that we think of it. It is, this is blood. Life is in the blood. You show ultimate respect for blood. Verse 22, whoever touches anything on which she sits shall wash his clothes and bathe himself in water and be unclean until the evening. Whether it is the bed or anything on which she sits, when he touches it, he shall be unclean until the evening. If any man lies with her and her menstrual impurity comes upon him, he shall be unclean 7 days, and every bed on which he lies shall be unclean. So here's the possibility that the woman's menstrual flow starts amidst the sexual act. And if that is the case, then the husband is supposed to himself, having come into contact with that blood, remain unclean in that sense of off limits for the next week because he's come into contact with the blood of life. And so that means that he's also supposed to avoid any type of sexual activity during the entire time of her menstrual flow, plus 7 days after that. And I think we'll see that in a moment here. It's an interesting thing that happens because of that. If you look at the cycle of fertility, if you refrain from sexual activity as a husband and wife until 7 days after the last bit of menstrual flow has occurred, you are typically going to be right at the optimum time for getting pregnant to have that sexual next sexual activity. And so this sort of procedure that we're seeing here on the pages of Jewish scripture would promote a high fertility rate. Verse number 25. If a woman has a discharge of blood for many days, not at the time of her menstrual impurity, or if she has a discharge beyond the time of her impurity, all the days of the discharge she will continue in uncleanness, as in the days of her impurity she shall be unclean. Every bed on which she lies, all the days of her discharge shall be to her as the bed of her impurity. Everything on which she sits shall be unclean, as in the uncleanness of the menstrual impurity. And whoever touches these things shall be unclean, shall wash her clothes and bathe herself in water and be unclean until the evening. So the idea that we're seeing here is what caused the trouble for the lady in the New Testament Gospels that had the issue of blood. She wasn't just simply having her period every month. She was having flow, or spotting, as we would say, at other times during the month. And the problem with that is she could never get past the required count of days in order to be declared clean. And so this would have been very frustrating to the lady. And you know that in the New Testament story, she had tried to get with doctors all over the place. She'd spent a lot of money, her life's earnings, in order to get clean of this process. But she ended up getting worse rather than better. And so then Jesus cleansed her, fixed the problem. So here is the count rule that she was running up against. Verse 28. If she is cleansed of her discharge, she shall count for herself 7 days, and after that she shall be clean. On the 8th day, she shall take 2 turtle doves or 2 pigeons and bring them to the priest to the entrance of the tent of meeting. The priest shall offer one as a sin offering, the other for a burnt offering. The priest shall make atonement for her before he who is for her unclean discharge. And thus you shall keep the people of Israel separate from their uncleanness, lest they die in their uncleanness by defiling my tabernacle that is in their midst. So the lady could not go to regular worship services when she was having her period. And she couldn't really go until 7 days after the last bit of her period. And if she had any spotting during the time after that, then she'd have to restart the count. And so that's what had happened to the woman with the issue of blood. And I think it was like 12 years that she'd been in that situation. It was very frustrating for her. Now, again, we're not talking about this being a matter of hygiene uncleanliness. This is all about the blood. Life is in the blood. And blood is therefore to be highly respected in all its forms, including menstrual blood. So those that are experiencing that are to remain aloof from regular societal interactions. Verse 32, this is the law for him who has a discharge and for him who has an emission of semen becoming unclean thereby, also for her who is unwell with her menstrual impurity, that is, for anyone, male or female, who has a discharge and for the man who lies with a woman who is unclean. So that's the summary of all of this, dealing with flows from the body, whether it's an unnatural flow or a natural flow. These were the rules that the Israeli people were supposed to live by. Now, you might ask the question, what about us today? Well, remember, we are not living under the law. Part of the purpose of the law was to train the people of Israel how to follow rules from God, how to follow His lead. And it was preparing them to follow the Messiah when He came. And the other thing is that these rules were needed for people who wouldn't do the appropriate thing unless there were rules. That's where Paul says rules are for lawbreakers. The law was for those that are the lawless. So today, sure, we have some of our own hygiene rules to try to keep things safe and secure and try not to transmit our possible illnesses to other people. I mean, that's the whole idea about the face covering mandate right now, is that that's been indicated by good medical authority as the best way to prevent the potential spread from an asymptomatic or low symptomatic person to somebody else. So we have procedures that we should use in all sorts of medical related things. And I think that's our way of kind of following up on this sort of thing in the area of meds or medication, not medication, but medical things. In these other issues, I do think that we should maintain our respect for blood. Acts chapter 15 makes it very plain that we should not be eating blood. So I would give a recommendation to you that, you husbands and wives should probably refrain from sexual interaction during the time of the period. Now, whether or not you need to wait 7 days after that, I'm going to leave that between you and God. I can only tell you that I think that we should still be showing ultimate respect for blood. Okay, so Leviticus chapter 16 will get us just barely started for what we're going to talk about tomorrow. He who is spoke to Moses after the death of the two sons of Aaron, when they drew near to he who is and died. So we've got the two sons that were killed by God, executed on the day of the fire coming down from God, the day of the final ordination of the priests. They did something unauthorized. They offered strange fire, which seems to be that they were using man-made fire instead of God-made fire, and they were offering incense at a time and place which was not appropriate. And it may be that they were drunk that day. It also may be that they thought they could go into the Holy of Holies. Because in the story we're about to read, the next thing we read in verse 2 is, he who is said to Moses, tell Aaron your brother not to come at any time into the holy place inside the veil before the mercy seat that is in the ark, or on the ark, so that he may not die, for I will appear in the cloud over the mercy seat. So here's another hint that perhaps Nadab and Abihu, perhaps drunk, with unauthorized incense and fire, may have tried to go in front of the Ark of the Covenant in the Holy of Holies, and that is what caused God to strike out and execute them for not following proper procedure. And so tomorrow we'll talk about how to actually come into the Holy of Holies.